Welcome to Moving the Rock. Whether sales is all you do or only part of what you do, the strategies and tactics of success can often feel split between two realities. You can become someone you're not to earn the recognition and praise of people you don't respect, or you can try to figure it out on your own, knowing you'll underperform your potential. We're here to offer a third way.
The idea that you can't have success without compromise is just wrong. You don't have to compromise to win in the long term. You can play the game in such a way that you win in the short term and the long term. Through our hard lessons learned, we can shift your way of thinking and create a better way. I'm Chris, founder of SiteShift.
And I'm James, founder of Florist Group. If you're tired of the status quo, we're here to help you move the rock on your career, your business, and your life. Welcome. All right, Chris, we're here. Our foray into video, man. It's great to see you.
Yeah, man. Let's have some fun, get to the next level, and draw in massive amounts of people.
And let's see if we can have that impact, man. We'll multiply that impact together. I love it. Well, you know, we've been talking a lot about leadership development. It's what we do. And we've been talking about in the context of sales organizations and driving growth, which is wonderful. I love to do this because the area that I like to have impact in is in not only driving revenue, but building value for organizations. And unfortunately, a lot of what we do in sales is discounted because of the old idea that as long as you put together enough people who are coin operated, motivated by money, success will follow. And that's really just due to a lack of understanding of the details of what goes into and all the thousands of permutations and areas of risk that can impact the sales process and the process of driving revenue for an organization. So I'm excited to dig in today.
Yeah, it's fresh on my mind, I think, because I just saw like a big social media business influencer just go off a little bit on how it's because you're not paying people enough, you know, like throwing money at it is going to fix the problem. And if that were true, right, you wouldn't have so many stories where there was a lot of funds and now there's a lot of carnage.
That's true. And, you know, there's a stat out there that says 57% of top performers are looking for work. So, you know, if it were just about the money, we would stick around. I mean, I've walked away from very well-paying jobs because I didn't feel valued and because I wasn't inspired and motivated to go to work. A big part of success, and I know you and I have both studied this and done research on this, it's not just about skill set and tool set. What separates top performers is their mindset. Mm. And if that mindset isn't sharp and crisp and motivated and committed to success, then they're not going to be, they're not going to perform at a high level. And a big part of what drives that kind of success is the culture within which they're working, the core values that guide the way that they, what's expected of them and how they're treated. So it all works together. And I know this is an old idea or an idea that's been kind of batted around in social media and in the popular press lately, but you know, it's true. If you don't feel like you belong where you are, and if it's a chore to get to work every day, you're going to have an organization that's more inclined to do the minimum to keep their job versus the maximum to actually see how much they can do, how far they can take their potential.
Yeah. Well, and I think also too, not only you're going to have this minimum, the quiet quitting we're hearing about, right?
Right.
You also get such a toxic culture when it's just money motivated. Because there are people listening to this that are like, okay, well, that was you. You left. Right. But you can get the job done, throw enough money at it. And while we know that's not true, there's still people that think that. But an environment driven just by money, and money matters, it's cutthroat and it's toxic. And you're not, you know, it's what we've hit so many times. You're not building a sales process where everyone can perform at the highest level. You're building a hero environment.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point. Let's talk about that for a minute. You know, when I was coming up my first 15 years at work in my career, I was changing jobs on average every 2 years. So I had 8 experiences in that 15-year period. Now, I was able to achieve, luckily, I was able to be part of five exits, and so and two of those were IPOs. So it was a largely successful experience, and it also gave me the experience to do what I'm doing today. But what was really difficult about that experience, and what made it hard for me, and what made me eventually burn out, was the fact that I was restarting over and over again. So my drive and my focus on making money created a short-term mentality for me and for my employers. If you reverse that and look at a company that only worries about paying people a lot of money, doesn't worry about their culture, then they're going to be hiring and firing, or hiring and losing salespeople on the regular, right? We know that the career of managers and VPs and sales and high growth environments is getting shorter and shorter. Well, why is this? Mm-hmm. Because they're coming to the job with fewer and fewer skill sets, and they don't really truly understand the bigger picture. How do I not only create transactions, create sales, but how do I build a growth culture that can actually empower a team that works together to create something bigger than the sum of its parts? If we continue to build organizations based on transactional short-term benefits like money, then that team is going to be turning over, that manager will be restarting, and success will be fleeting, which again creates turnover for the management position. So yeah, you can get success short-term, but does it create leverage and a multiplier effect that can really drive value for the team, each individual, and for the organization? Highly unlikely, very difficult. And why not try to step up just to see if you can make that happen?
Yeah. You know, it's so often you see it in nature and the environment and everything that we do as we interact with the environment. When we pursue this quicker shortcut to get this short-term fast result, it does longer-term damage. And I have no doubt there have to be people that are listening that are like, yeah, not for me. And we want to encourage you and say, hey, after you experience the fruit of the long-term damage, we're still here. but there are people out there listening that are wanting a different way. They're wanting to step into that. And maybe intuitively they already are. We're going to help them amplify that today and put some language around it and some process around it so that you can take what you're doing intuitively, what you desire to see happen, and do it intentionally over and over and over again.
Right. Well, let's jump in. The idea that we're going to explore today has lots of directions that we can go in. So we'll see where it takes us. The thought that provoked this was this idea around what is required to build a growth culture. And you and I are heavily invested in this idea of mapping growth cultures, right? And we know that the culture is a outcome of the influence that the leaders, people, and systems have on getting things done. You know, so how do leaders come to the task of getting things done? How do their people show up? And how do those systems reinforce positive and negative behaviors that ultimately make the organization successful or not successful? So that all combines to create the experience of the culture that we build and that we work within. And ideally, we're thinking about building a culture that can sustain success over time, even when we change out the heroes that helped initiate, right, the building of that organization. We're talking about leaders, people, and systems, not just leaders and people. We want to move past the idea of working as hard as you can, then working as smart as you can, and then working as many hours in the day that you can. And then when you hit that limit, what's next? Well, the only thing that you can do to continue to drive scale and growth is to focus on the leverage that you and your teammates can create together by working together, learning together, instead of as individual contributors. Everyone has a role on that team. And now that team can codify best practices and create the environment for a culture that can sustain itself beyond the career of a top performer, a hero, or even the person that founded that sales organization or built that culture. It can now sustain itself over and over again over many years and continue to grow.
I love it. When you say create the culture, that is such a powerful phrase that I just want to highlight because I don't want us to skip over this as we dive right in. Too many leaders are letting the culture be created rather than creating the culture intentionally they want. Or they're haphazardly doing it. Like the stories they tell, the things they celebrate, they haven't put thought and intention behind. And when you think about it this way, like, and you can get super deep with this, most cultures are in some way out of balance. They're too rules-based or they're too relationship-based. There's too much chaos or there's too much order. I mean, they vacillate all the time. And so there's been a lot of great writers writing around the culture we're attracted to is drawing us in because of something that's incomplete in us. And we're looking for that extreme version. So there might be somebody that's came out of a really loose environment and really wants tighter management. Somebody that came out of a super tight management culture and wants a looser environment. And they don't realize they're overreacting and going the other extreme. But when you become the kind of leader who creates the culture, you're rightfully assuming a responsibility that is yours. Mm-hmm. But you want to do it thoughtfully and intentionally. So you build a culture that is whole, that is balanced. You're going to develop people. You're going to draw the right people in. And that gets really exciting to me.
Yeah, yeah. And those people will bring value that you couldn't even imagine possible.
Yeah.
So everybody that comes in, when they have the freedom, when they're a good fit and they have the freedom to experiment, to innovate, man, it creates magic.
Yeah, buddy. So yeah. For me, that's why it's like, okay, then how do we walk people through this so that they can do that thoughtfully, yeah, intentionally?
Well, let's distill it to a team environment and let's think about the leader of that team. So let's think about the sales manager. We think of that leader as setting the stage and really setting the boundaries for what will be possible for that team's culture. And you know, the reason I say that is because the way that that manager shows up, the boundaries they create, will tell every member of the team what's expected of them, what kind of behavior, thought processes, decisions will be rewarded, which ones will not, or maybe even create some kind of punishment. So folks will very quickly figure out what lanes they need to be driving in to keep the manager happy and to stay on track. So we think of this phrase of learn, do, teach. It's not new, but it follows this idea of we think the best kind of leaders know the way, go the way, and show the way. They create a model for their team members that is based on a core level of understanding of what's required to get the job done. And that core level of understanding generates a level of trust between manager and team member. And then that trust evolves into and turns into respect, right? A mutual level of respect. When you have trust, respect, and understanding that builds that foundation of that relationship, now the manager has earned the right to present themselves as a coach, somebody who can help every member of the team elevate themselves in the context of the team. If you don't have all three things, if you don't know the way, go the way, and show the way, if you don't focus on learning, doing, and teaching as a manager, then you will short-circuit your ability to create that level of respect and short-circuit your ability to have impact on your team members and thereby lowering the expectations or the ability of that team to perform.
Yeah, and this is where I get really activated because I am curious. I want to learn. I want to get better. And so for people that are already at that place, and we all know people who have acted this way, that they're like, I already know it all. I have all the answers. They're the impediment to a healthy culture developing. And when we come at this place from a standpoint of going, okay, I'm going to have a beginner's mind. I'm going to learn something new that I didn't know before. I'm going to learn it deeper. I'm going to get more context, more nuance, more application. We're activated. I like to use this. The things that irritate me, how can I get them to fascinate me? You know, I might have an issue with my wife or an issue with my kids or an issue with a friend where it's an irritation. If I can turn that irritation into a fascination, I come as a learner. I'm ready to know the way forward. And anybody listening to this is facing a problem where they either need to A, find the way forward, or B, improve the way forward, which puts us in a learning posture. We haven't surveyed the world. We don't know it all. How can we know the way and learn?
Yeah, yeah. I love that. And you've set us up perfectly for that first stage. So when we think about learn, do, teach, the first type of manager, so there are three types of managers that we identify. So we think about managers falling into three categories. And I recognize that it's dangerous to oversimplify something as complicated as sales management. But we're doing this, I think, Chris, to have it resonate with folks and make it consumable. So I'd like everyone to think about which of these three categories you fit in or your leader fits in, and think about how that's impacting your organization. So in the context of learning, you could just be the learn type of manager, where you go out to fill your brain with wisdom and knowledge and then impart that knowledge to your team. But if you're just learning and you're not doing and teaching, if you're not thinking about the other two components, then you're going to end up being the type of manager that simply doesn't seek to understand what's going on. You simply bark activity. I want data and I want activity. And you're helping folks think about what they have to do. You're solving their problems with what they have to do. You're reminding them constantly of what they could be doing better. But without the experience of actually doing it and teaching it, you don't know how to help them understand how to get there. And so if you're frustrated by a team that isn't maybe from your perception isn't listening to you, or if you've got to say the same things over and over again, it may be because you're stopping too short of adding enough value to actually have an impact on them. And when you think about leading a team of salespeople who are incentivized to perform, if their experience of you is one that cannot, in their perception, cannot add value or help them get better, then what do they have to gain from listening to you? They actually only have things to lose by listening to you, right? So there was one time in my career, Chris, where I had the opportunity to be part of the process of hiring my manager. I was hired before the manager for our group was, and I had a chance to interview him. And I had a chance to provide him with a resounding, you know, multiple thumbs up. And the only criteria I had was, could he make me better? Could I learn from him? Could he help me make money? Period. Now imagine this, if you're a leader or a sales manager who doesn't have the respect of his team and whose team is not listening to them from your perception, a team that's not doing the things that you're recommending, not executing at the level that you think that they should be, ask yourself that question. How much can they really learn from you? How effective are you at helping them make more money? Evaluate yourself leveraging the same criteria that you would imagine they would use or that you would use to evaluate your manager.
It's almost like, and I've seen this happen with that type of manager before, it's like a parent that has that child that enters into the two and threes, and they start saying no. And it's not that the child is trying to be intentionally defiant, willfully defiant. Literally, the baby experiences the mind connected to the mother's mind. They don't know themselves differently. And then individuation begins with like, hey, I start here and end here. She starts here and ends here. No, I'm not going to do that. And then what I've seen this type of manager want to do almost is be able to rewind the clock back to some kind of infantile blind trust. Mm-hmm. Rather than guide the development to interdependence, right? Which is the parenting journey, taking them through adolescence, all this. So that's why we can say in a lot of ways, so much of leadership is being a healthy parent. And what happens to the manager that is just barking the data and the activity, they're literally keeping the people around them regressed, repressed from their growth,
right,
because of the way they're treating them.
Right, right. Right. And that creates conflict, right? Just like with a parent who doesn't understand why the child's behaving that way.
Yeah.
That creates conflict, it creates frustration, and that can just escalate the miscommunication and the seed of that poor relationship, just like in a team environment.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. So, and what, go ahead.
Oh, please, man, I was going to continue, but rock it out, man.
Yeah, no, keep us going. I'll just make this one last thing. Let the frustration be a wake-up call that this is happening for you as a manager.
Yeah.
Because more intensity is not going to fix it.
Right.
Or every parent that yelled at their kid to get the result that they wanted would keep repeating that behavior. But at some point, it stops working.
You're talking to me when you say that, because I feel like you're talking to me, because it just took me a long time to recognize that the frustration I felt didn't only have to be solved by looking at other people in other situations. It could also be solved and addressed by looking in the mirror and asking myself, what can I do? What can I be doing to minimize this frustration? And it turns out there was a ton that I could have been doing that I wasn't.
Yes, no yes, doubt. Yes. Love it.
So if we are a learn manager and we're skipping the do teach, what if we took the next step and we became, hey, that learn do manager? That manager who knows the way and goes the way. And frankly, this is, I think, where most sales managers end up, basically because they don't get any training on how to truly be a leader of other folks. The learn-do manager is that manager who perhaps was a top performer, so they understand what's required, or at least what was required for them to be successful. And their default mode of managing is to get into the weeds with their team members. So they get out there with every one of those team members on those sales calls, doing account reviews, and getting very involved in the activity of selling, so much so that they forget about the systems and processes and CRM and everything else that is designed to create leverage and multiply the value of that team. What this ends up doing is it may end up creating value in terms of driving revenue. But what ends up happening is that the learn-do manager isn't really teaching people. They may be modeling behavior, but they're also creating that dependency in their sales team that says, hey, don't worry, my manager will come help me out here. Or that default expectation that help is coming. It also takes the manager's opportunity away from them to create leverage, right? Because now their time is consumed with every individual deal. They feel like they own the forecast. Everything is falling on their shoulders. And they really miss an opportunity to empower their team to actually help them drive the performance that they seek. They feel like they have to be there present to make it happen.
Yeah, man. If you could see inside my mind right now, it's like flashes of lights as these like neurons are firing and synapses are connecting. because I'm like, we can't take this analogy far enough about how we're talking about like raising a child connects so much to what it means to develop and not mm-hmm. get stuck at the learn do. So here's what hit my head. For a few years I was a professor, and they could not hire counselors fast enough for the kids. The more they hired, the counselor would book completely up. What the heck is going on, right? And there were a number of things happening, and this is before the pandemic, and this is like, 10 years ago. So here's what was going on. The learn-do parent had progressed to where like the kids' activities are happening all the time. Kid gets in the car. Here's what goes on. Mom goes, hey, did you get your homework in? Did you finish that? Did you get prep for that quiz? Did you get your cleats? I washed your clothes. I got your uniform. We got practice at 4:30. We're going to go here at 6:30. You got this at 8. They are so done for. It's being done for them. That by the time they got to college, they were not ready. It was an intense anxiety because they're thrown into all this agency that they weren't used to having. No one is telling me when to turn it in. No one is telling me to get ready. No one is running my schedule. It created a problem that I think has only gotten worse because they weren't allowed, they weren't given space to develop for themselves. And so this, it looks like this learn do leader, this learn do manager is very caring and very involved. And you'll often hear them celebrated like, man, they're just not afraid to get their elbows dirty, right? And that could be a good thing, but very often it means they're not letting the people around them grow and develop.
Right. And they're not delivering on the promise or the expectation of the organization. So what ends up happening, we have the stat that tells us that Korn Ferry International did some research and they discovered that somewhere around 50% of most sales organizations, performing organizations, only about half of them perform. The other half are full of non-performers. You know, so why is that? Oftentimes it's because there aren't systems in place that can elevate the team. So what ends up happening is we hire a bunch of individual contributors that by themselves do what they think is best, but because that manager isn't thinking from a systems perspective that can elevate everyone, they're allowing everyone to do their own thing. And we have a natural, very common and predictable segmentation of the team of the achievers and the non-achievers. And then when you try to scale that organization without the systems in place to really codify those best practices, you end up scaling an inefficient organization. So it requires more people to achieve the results that the organization expects. And so at some point, the organization is going to point to the leadership of that sales or that sales team and understand what's holding them back. There isn't enough leverage. There aren't enough systems in place to elevate everyone on the team and to get everybody out of this hero mentality and into a more systems thinking mentality where we can create that, where we can create a whole that's worth more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, it's taking me back to what we talked about last episode, so people got to check that out too. Your team is as weak as your weakest mindset and as strong as your strongest system. And that's how you approach this in a holistic way. Mm. And, you know, I'm cracking up a little bit because it's when people get married, right? Or have a partner that they move in with or whatever, and they're like, oh, your family of origin did it different than my family of origin. And we have these competing systems, oftentimes no systems, none that were spoken out or surfaced very well. And it's why it's such a powerful way to look at a company culture or a sales team culture and diagnose, you know, what are these? We're running around with our hair on fire. We don't have enough systems. What are the unspoken systems? What are the things that are rewarded that don't need to be rewarded, that conflict with the values? And what's happening when you make this progression of growth and you become this holistic leader and you move through these levels, you see comprehensively, right? You're not reducing down reality to what right. you want it to be.
Right. And so if you're focused on the third level, if you're the learn, do, teach leader, if you know the way, go the way, and you're able to show the way, you know, what it does is it forces you to create balance across all three of those components, which is great. So now you have a balanced mindset from a leadership perspective, and you have balance in terms of the time that you dedicate to your work. So what's really interesting is as you understand how to teach and how to communicate best practices and reinforce best practices using systems like CRM and other elements of your sales tech stack, processes, et cetera, it ends up making you more efficient, more effective. It ends up helping you get more out of the people on the team that are around you. It helps you to eliminate having everyone learning the same things over and over again in their own little worlds, and instead you're combining the learning so that folks are teaching each other. We don't have unnecessary replication of mistakes and unnecessary replication of that learning process. We can bring it all into a centralized location and make sure everyone's learning from everyone else. It creates a huge amount of leverage, and it accelerates the process of getting better. What's also really cool about this, you opened up the conversation talking about that know-it-all team member. Well, in the sales world, Chris, that is the top performer who has already invested in their process, and they know the way, you know, they go the way. They don't care about showing the way, but it's working for them. They're hitting their number. They're making as much money as they want, and they can reject any kind of desire for help. They can also be really negative and mean when it comes to their critique of the folks who try to help them but don't live up to the standard that they've set for themselves, right? So they can actually degrade the teamwork that's trying to be established by their manager. So in those situations, a leader who can know the way, go the way, and show the way doesn't have to teach this person how to become better at their job. Now, they certainly can. They don't have to be able to do their job better than they can. I mean, think about a sports team. Can every coach on a team perform the role of every player better than their world-class players? Absolutely not. Well, how do they earn the respect of that Hall of Fame, that future Hall of Famer? They earn the respect of that future Hall of Famer by helping them find those next levels of incremental improvements that can help them deliver the goal that they have for themselves in their career. It's that idea of the shared goal, shared path. So if you have a top performer who's ignoring you and doesn't think that they can learn from you, look in the mirror, right? Do you understand that top performer well enough to understand what motivates them and drives them? And then think about how you can add value, just small incremental levels of value, to help them get to where they want to be. It can help you advance yourself beyond just the limitations of being able to help folks that you know more than. It can also get you to the level where you can start motivating top performers. And guess what? If you can do that, you can build a team of top performers and you can keep a team of top performers. You won't have to deal with 50 to 60% of those top performers looking for work on a regular basis.
Yeah. I was actually going to challenge what you were saying and ask this question, but can't somebody know the way and show the way even if they can't go the way? It was in my head, and then you used that athletic example. And I think that's so powerful to highlight, because there's a lot of leaders out there who know the way, who can show the way, even if they haven't yet gone the way. And there's a moral authority in the sense that we want to live out what we value and teach. But, you know, life stage, genetics, certain choices you've made, all of these things apply in different ways. And if we become the kind of people who really learn deeply, we can show deeply.
Yeah.
As we guide
people. So let me just, since you've taken it to that level, Chris, let me go a little bit deeper. Yeah. So what's really cool about this analogy is that when we say know the way, go the way, show the way, we oftentimes automatically think about going as skill set based, right? I'm going to go on a sales call. I'm going to ask great questions. I'm going to turn this meeting into a magical, well-choreographed dance that ends up in an enthusiastic sale. But think about going the way in terms of actually understanding the mindset of a top performer, right? So if I can go the way in terms of practicing discipline or overcoming depression or anxiety, dealing with hardships in my life that or the things that may prevent me from operating at peak performance, that's another level of going the way that I can then leverage to help show the way. So when we think about building winning habits, we think about developing our mindset, our skill set, and our tool set. So we can think about that, developing those three things for ourselves as leaders, but also developing our understanding of those things in the context of the team members that we have. What do they all need at their various levels of performance to get better? And as you and I know, bottom performers, you know, really need that tool set to give them that base foundation. but then they need to improve on the skill sets required to make those tools work for them. As you become, as you get closer and closer to mastery, mindset takes over and has a bigger percentage of the responsibility for creating incremental performance improvements, because you can only practice so much, right? What makes practice even more impactful? It's the enthusiasm, the discipline, the excitement, the motivation that you bring to the table. It's that, you know, think of all the greatest athletes in the world. What gets many of them get going based on being dissed in the news, right? So all that bulletin board material that may burn that, make that fire happen. As a leader, if you understand your people well enough, you'll begin to understand what can actually trigger the mindset shifts that are required to help your top performers actually get there. And that's all part of the, it's all part of going the way so that you can then show the way.
I love it. It was taking me back, you know, at two, you feed your child, you bathe them, you change their diaper. Now in our house at, you know, 20 next week, 18, 17, it's more
three daughters. Yeah.
Yeah. It's more complex. Like you gotta have the mindset. It's not enough to have the tool set that they, you know, give you basic parenting stuff at the hospital. You got to have the mindset. So I love this. I love the way that we've walked through the conversation. And, you know, there's people, no doubt, that are inspired to go, this is where I need to apply myself.
Well, I hope it helps. We'll be back again in a week to pick up another great topic. It's always a pleasure with me.
Thanks for listening. If you've learned something or were inspired to try something new, please rate the podcast and share this episode with someone you know. If you'd like to learn more, visit and connect with me, James, at florisgroup.com, florisgroup.com.
And if you want to connect with me, Chris, check out SiteShift, SIGHT, shift.com. Peace.